TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. How does the melting Arctic affect the rest of the world? NOAA's Arctic Report Card, 2016. The Arctic is now warming twice as fast as the global average. That's the finding in the 11th Arctic Report Card, released on December 13, 2016, at the annual American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco. The area around the North Pole is now 3.5 degrees Celsius warmer than in 1900, way above the safety goals set at the 2015 COP21 conference. In Paris, an agreement was made to keep warming under 1 to 1.5 degrees Celsius to prevent dangerous climate change. NOAA's Arctic Research Program Director Jeremy Mathis said about the year 2016, "Rarely have we seen the Arctic show a clearer, stronger, or more pronounced signal of persistent warming than this year." The Arctic Report Card lists the many ways in which the warming Arctic affects sea level rise, ocean and air circulation, as well as weather in the Northern Hemisphere and beyond. Until recently, humankind knew very little about the Arctic, the near-permanent ice that filled the North Pole region between the coastlines of Russia, Norway, Iceland, Greenland, Canada, and the U.S., concealed the fact that all this is ocean. Research from satellites, submarines, and icebreakers revealed a melting trend during the Arctic summer that has been accelerating since 1988. Scientists are now offering estimates for the complete disappearance of sea ice during the Arctic summer that range from 2020 to 2040. Ice does reform during the Arctic winter, but no longer grows fast and thick or completely fills the area up to the coastlines. In turn, the warming Arctic oceans also lead to melting of permafrost on land and affect the Greenland ice sheet. A surprise for scientists was that a warming Arctic also changes the ocean currents in the Northern Hemisphere, and even the wind currents. The jet stream that blows from west to east around the Arctic follows the boundaries between hot and cold air. As the Arctic warms, the temperature difference diminishes and the jet stream slows and begins to meander further to the north and south. The unseasonable coldness or warmth we experience in areas of North America is one result. NOAA is a scientific agency within the United States Department of Commerce, and you will discover a few curious references to potential benefits of Arctic warming for shipping and tourism in this press conference. They relate to the commercial mission of an agency that also does excellent science. The American Geophysical Union, AGU, is an organization of geophysicists from 144 countries. Geophysical sciences involve atmospheric and ocean sciences, as well as Earth and space. At the AGU on December 13, 2016, there was standing room only for the press conference that was about to reveal the peer-reviewed assessment of the Arctic Report Card for 2016. NOAA Arctic Research Program Director Jeremy Mathis presented, alongside Don Perovich, Adjunct Professor of Engineering at Thayer School of Engineering, Lead Editor for the Sea Ice Essay, and Marco Tedesco. He's professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, Columbia University, and the lead editor for the Greenland Ice Essay. Here's Professor Jeremy Mathis.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to see you all here, that we have a standing room only crowd for the Arctic Report Card this year. NOAA and our partner scientists from around the world have been tracking the Arctic and putting out the annual peer-reviewed Arctic report card for the last 11 years. And I'm really proud to say that this year, the Arctic report card represents the work of 61 scientists from 11 different countries. And that's really important this year because we've seen a year in 2016 in the Arctic like we've never seen before. The report card this year clearly shows a stronger and more pronounced signal of persistent warming than in any previous year in our observational record. And those warming effects in the Arctic have had a cascading effect through the environment, including down into Arctic ecosystems. And while the science of what's driving that change gets clearer, we need to expand and improve our ability to do sustained observations in the Arctic. And we need to do these sustained observations to help provide actionable information and intelligence for forecasting that people desperately need in the Arctic, as well as other stakeholders who are looking to take advantage of emerging opportunities in the Arctic. The issues that we're facing today in the Arctic include food security, cultural survival, environmental and community health, as well as extensive development opportunities. And these opportunities are related to commerce and trade, and as well as national security. So with that, we're going to take you through a summary of the Arctic report card this morning. There are a great many more details in the report itself, so I encourage you to look into it carefully and read the nuances in the chapters. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Don Perovich, who's going to take us through the first part of the report card.
Arctic air temperature continues to increase at double the rate of the average global temperature. Since the beginning of the 20th century, Arctic-wide annual average air temperature over land has increased by 3.5 degrees Celsius. That's 6.3 degrees Fahrenheit. Between October 2015 and September 2016, this air temperature was 2 degrees centigrade, or 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, above the 1981 to 2010 baseline. This marks the highest value in the observational record, a record that began in 1900. Autumn, spring, and winter showed extensive warm air temperature anomalies across the entire central Arctic. This was primarily due to southerly winds moving warm air into the Arctic from mid-latitudes. However, there are also cold temperature anomalies across the central Arctic Ocean in the summer of 2016. And these air temperatures influence the sea ice cover of the Arctic Ocean. After experiencing the lowest winter maximum sea ice extent in the satellite record, a satellite record that began in 1979, many anticipated a record summer minimum extent. But relatively cold summer air temperatures over the Arctic Ocean prevented that. However, due to extreme warming this fall, the report card editors decided to add an addendum to update several indicators, including sea ice. Warm air and ocean temperatures in the fall led to a record-breaking delay of fall freeze-up in the Arctic sea ice. From mid-October to the present, the ice extent has been the lowest observed since the beginning of the satellite record. Again, a record that began in 1979. As the sea ice retreats in the summer, previously ice-covered water is exposed to more sunlight. Unlike the white surfaces, which reflect sunlight, the dark ocean absorbs the sun's heat. This is causing sea surface temperature to increase throughout much of the Arctic Ocean and adjacent seas. Relatively warm regional air temperatures and warmer water from the North Atlantic and Pacific Oceans are also contributing to these warmer upper ocean temperatures. In fact, in August 2016, sea surface temperature was up to 5 degrees centigrade, that's 9 degrees Fahrenheit, higher than the 1982 to 2010 average. This was in regions of the Barents and Chukchi Seas and off the east and west coast of Greenland. Ocean primary productivity, or algae blooms, are also increasing as the summer sea ice declines. Increased algae blooms are observed throughout the Arctic Ocean and adjacent seas, particularly in the Barents Sea and in Canada's Hudson Bay, where primary productivity was 19% above the 2003 to 2015 baseline. These conditions in the Arctic Ocean make it more prone to ocean acidification. This is compared to the rest of the global oceans because ocean acidification is caused by the uptake of increased human-caused carbon dioxide emissions. The Arctic Ocean absorbs more carbon dioxide because it is relatively cool and experiences a relatively high influx of fresh water from melting glaciers and sea ice. Marine calcifiers like clams and snails, which build shells, are particularly vulnerable. Over the next 2 to 3 decades, ocean stress on Arctic-based marine fisheries and the Arctic communities that depend on these fish for food, culture, and livelihood. Now, to shift to more of the report card, I'll turn things over to Marco.
Thank you, Don. And let's start with the Greenland ice sheet. The Greenland ice sheet continued to lose mass in 2016, as it's done since 2002, when satellite measurements are available. The melt onset in 2016 was the second earliest in the 37 record of observations from satellites, close to the record of the 2012 by a few days. The melting season lasted up to 30 to 40 days longer than usual in the northeast Greenland and 15 to 20 days longer along the west coast compared to the 1981-2010 average. Shifting to spring snow cover, the snow cover extent has also declined over the period of satellite observations starting in 1967, and particularly since 2005. In 2016, a new record low of April and May snow cover extent was reached in North America. Warming Arctic surface air temperatures have a clear influence on the timing of snow melt onset. However, there's also evidence that snow depth is decreasing, and which might precondition also snowpack for earlier and more rapid melt in the springtime. Following to 3-4 years of decline of browning, tundra greenness, a satellite measure of chlorophyll, generally increased throughout the Arctic between 2014 and 15. Longer-term trends show a mix of greening and browning varying on a regional basis. Warming air temperatures in the Arctic are causing normal frozen ground called permafrost to thaw. The permafrost is carbon-rich, and when it thaws, it gives off greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and methane. Tundra ecosystems are taking up increasingly more and more of this carbon during the growing season over the past several decades, but this has been also offset by increasing carbon loss during the winter. And overall, we estimate the tundra is actually releasing net carbon to the atmosphere. And now I'm going to give the word to Jeremy again. Thank you.
So as I said, that was just a very brief overview of what's in the report card and a high-level summary that we wanted to provide this morning to facilitate the questions that we want to be able to take from you. And so before we go into the question phase, I just want to summarize that the impacts of the persistent warming trend over the last 30 years in the Arctic are clearly evident in the land and the ocean environment. And the acceleration of many of these signals, their interdependency, and the growing recognition that the Arctic is an integral part of the larger Earth system have increased the pressure for more effective and timely communications of data to our relevant communities. And as we've started saying more and more, what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. We look to meet these challenges by better synthesizing Arctic change across disciplinary boundaries and taking a holistic approach as we think about Arctic science. And as we move forward with products like the Arctic Report Card, we're going to be thinking about ways to use it as a tool that can not only present our scientific findings and summaries of the science that has occurred during the year, but also begin to think about strategies and adaptation solutions that can be applied for communities in the Arctic and for people around the world as we deal with the consequences of Arctic change.
We've been doing the report card for 11 years, and when it started, you kind of had to listen closely because the Arctic was whispering change, and now it's not whispering anymore. It's speaking change, it's shouting change.
That was Don Perovich, adjunct professor of engineering at Dartmouth College. During the Q&A session, a journalist asked about the economic consequences of the rapidly warming Arctic. Here's Marco Tedesco, research professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory.
If you think about in North America, when the snow melts, how much snow you have, how fast will disappear, it's impacting lot of activities in terms of hydropower production, for example, freshwater resources, but also it's impacting the ecosystems around it. You know, the snow melting sooner and faster is leaving a drier soil exposed to a warmer summer. So you might have more droughts, you might have more forest fires. So this might have, of course, ramifications for economy, for population. Permafrost thaw, of course, has a big impact on infrastructure in Alaska and other places where it was considered to be permanently frozen, and now it's not anymore.
It's a common question, when will the Arctic be ice-free in summer? And it's important to remember in summer, there'll still be ice in the winter. There's a lot of speculation. If you look at model projections, around 2040. But again, that's just an estimate of an unknown future. Another interesting question to pose is, when will the reduction of sea ice be so large that it impacts human activities? And I like that question because that's one I can answer. And that's right now. We've seen it in increased resource exploration. We saw it this past summer with the cruise ship, the Crystal Serenity, navigating the Northwest Passage that more than a century ago, no one could get through at all. So I think we're seeing changes in the sea ice cover now that are impacting human activities, and it's a particularly difficult time because the ice is in transition, and transitions are always particularly difficult to predict. In terms of the sea ice cover, I mean, we talk a lot about changing from 8 million square kilometers to 3 million square kilometers, and those are big numbers. But if you look at it, back in the 1980s, the September ice extent was around the size of the continental United States. If we look at this past year, 2016, it's as though part of the United States has melted. The entire United States east of the Mississippi, plus the states from Minnesota all the way down to Louisiana, plus all of North Dakota. So the changes are significant. The changes are real. We put these changes out there so people are aware of what's going on.
And also, of course, the Arctic report card is based on observations. It's evidence-based on the observations. The data is paid by the public, by the U.S. public, through the federal government, and it's publicly available. It's transparent, and I think it speaks for itself.
If we left this room and looked from space at the Arctic sea ice cover, it's bright and it's white. It reflects most of the sunlight, reflects 80% of the sunlight incident on it. But when that melts away and you have an ocean, it goes from being a good reflector of sunlight to a really good absorber of sunlight. It absorbs over 90% of the sunlight, and that causes warming, which causes more melting, which causes more warming, and you get a feedback. And that's called the ice albedo feedback. But it's a way that you can take a small change and amplify it into a big change. In terms of the impact on marine ecosystems, there's a couple things going on that also, even before the ice melts away, it thins. In a simple sense, for phytoplankton, they need nutrients and they need light. And as the ice melts, they're getting more light, so you get these big blooms. And the question is the rest of the food web ready to interact with these blooms when and where they happen? And that's something that we just don't know at this time.
And Don, if I may add something also there, if you expose the ocean, you're changing completely also the way the surface interacts with the atmosphere, because exposing the ocean releases more moisture in the atmosphere, which in turn means energy and can be used for melting even more. We see this connections for Greenland, for example, between the sea ice disappearance and Greenland. And we see other connections about cloud formations and other things that might impact the atmosphere around the Arctic.
And I will add one thing. I can't sit up here and not say ocean acidification one time, for those of you who know me. So, the greening that's happening in the Arctic, this increase in primary productivity, is stimulating phytoplankton growth, which may have positive effects on the Arctic ecosystem. It may provide more food into the base of the food web. But at the same time, that primary productivity is the mechanism by which carbon dioxide is moved from the atmosphere into the ocean. And that's what ocean acidification is. It's the movement of carbon from the air into the water. So we already see a rapid progression of ocean acidification in the Arctic, and that seems to be accelerating as the ice melts back further and further and productivity increases. So on the one hand, we're going to be having more phytoplankton and providing more food into the food web, but on the other hand, it's going to be an exacerbation of the ocean acidification effect. So that's another process that we're going to have to pay very close attention to see what the balance is between ecosystem productivity and impacts associated with ocean acidification.
Are there any other questions from reporters in the room?
I understand that the Arctic and the Antarctic are very different environments, but I think sometimes it gets confusing as to why there's ice growth in Antarctica and then these annual report cards from the Arctic showing such dramatic change. So can you explain why looking at the Arctic is not just cherry-picking a very dramatic region?
I would say if it's raining in Italy, would you think that the same thing has to happen in the West Coast of the United States? I mean, they are completely different systems. What joins them together is the fact that they are covered by ice. But the atmosphere, the ice, the size of the continent, the size of the ice, and how they react to the input from the atmospheric change in terms of system is completely different. Greenland, the Arctic, is an ocean surrounded by land. Antarctica is this piece of ice surrounded by ocean. The winds somehow, circumpolar winds, are protecting Antarctica somehow from spills of what mid-latitudes activities going on in terms of the atmosphere. Ozone hole, believe it or not, is responsible for some of the strengthening or weakening of these circumpolar winds. And they are very two different systems. So I understand there might be some confusion, but this sounds to me like the postcard I saw once when somebody says, greetings from the Arctic, and there was a polar bear and a penguin. So this confusion should not happen, I think.
Hi, Santa Barbara Independent. From your remarks about the trends, it sounded like this fall in the Arctic might have been a little bit of a surprise. If so, can you talk about that, Mr. Paravich?
It was a record, and records are always, you know, somewhat surprising. When I look at things, for me, the biggest surprise was in 2007. The Arctic sea ice summer extent reached an all-time record minimum by a record amount. And if you look at the time series of ice extent, it's never gone higher than it was in 2006. So it's as though we were in one state slowly declining, and then there was this sharp drop to a new normal that we've continued to bounce around. Some years are a little up. 2012 was another record minimum, but it's just there was this major change in 2007. And for me, that was a big surprise. I think it is interesting to see what's going to happen this year with the fact that fall freeze-up is so slow and the air temperatures are so warm, but it's still early in the year.
And for me, the surprise this year has been we've shifted a little bit. The stories have been about the summertime, summer minimum, summer temperature excursions, summer snow cover. And now we're seeing the persistent warming carrying over into the winter months. So we don't know enough yet. We need a few more years to see if that trend continues or if it has been a one-off thing related to some larger global process. But if the persistent warming that we've seen this fall carries over for the next few years, then as Don just said, we may be at another step in a regime shift in the Arctic that will lead to a new era of change, even compared to what we're seeing now.
And as we pointed out, also for Greenland, it's just not lasting longer. It's also starting earlier. We suffer the snow over the United States. So the melting season is also stretched, somehow getting longer, invading somehow spring and fall. And this is creating preconditioning before the current melt, but also is preconditioning potentially the next melting season.
I think we have time for one last question.
My name is Mary Miller from the Exploratorium. You mentioned what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay there. Can you give us some examples of how, for instance, that extremely warm fall has potentially affected weather patterns, in other parts of the world, maybe us down here?
Do you want to take that, Marco?
I think there are people in the audience who can somehow link to this, and I'm asking them if they feel comfortable to speak. But in the case of, for the atmospheric point of view, and jet stream, and I just don't want to put Jennifer on the spot, but Jennifer Francis, she is here. But for Greenland, in any case, where we talk about albedo, remember that also we're talking about large-scale phenomena. If the solar radiation is absorbed more by the ocean, there's less in the atmosphere. The gradient the difference between the temperature at the pole and the mean latitude is one of the drivers of climate on Earth, and that is changing, and that is impacting weather patterns and climate. But Jennifer is, she's willing to say something, but I'll be more than happy to do so.
Sure. Jennifer Francis at Rutgers University. Thanks, Marco. It's difficult to unravel how current or extreme weather that we've seen this fall, and there has been plenty of that, might have a role of the Arctic in it. I mean, that will be topics of research for sure. But that said, seeing an Arctic that's so much warmer than it should be all this fall by such huge margins, I can't imagine that there isn't going to be an impact on the weather that we've seen this fall. Over the last few years, we've noticed that when we have these big pulses of warmth in the Arctic, they are always associated with extreme weather events. And again, it's hard to make absolute definite connections between those two things, but we definitely see these causal relationships. And as Marco said, when the Arctic gets so warm and reduces this north to south temperature difference, we know that tends to have a slowing effect on the west to east winds of the jet stream. It tends to take these bigger north-south swings, and that all by itself is contributing to the warming of the Arctic. So it's helping to bring that warm air and moisture poleward, which is exacerbating the warming, which is maybe causing the jet stream to be even wavier. So we may be seeing this new feedback emerging between the warming Arctic and what's happening with the jet stream.
Thank you. We are out of time. That concludes our press conference. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Jennifer Francis from Rutgers University. She was part of the team of 61 scientists from 11 nations that presented the 11th annual peer-reviewed report card on the status of the Arctic under the auspices of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The other speakers were Marco Tedesco, he's professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, Columbia University, New York, and NOAA's Arctic Research Program Director, Jeremy Mathis, and Don Perovich, Adjunct Professor of Engineering at Dartmouth College. The report provided the latest information on the accelerating warming of the Arctic. The Arctic Report Card 2016 has been posted free online from the beginning. We need to make sure that this research will not be defunded or classified. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.